Our next guest, Jose Arce, is a local tattoo artist and Tijuana legend. After being deported, he came to the city and turned his dreams into reality by starting off a business and currently promotes the deported lifestyle online through his various social media platforms. Please welcome our guest, Jose Arce. You're trying to balance a life of, one, kind of chasing this dream of art and creativity and learning these, I mean, all of these skill sets require not only time, but also just opportunities to have experience. Putting ink on your friends, then becoming a profession, working with art and working in Hollywood and doing, you know, some work there. But all in tandem with this lifestyle that was all this kind of like under the surface, basically. Your extended family or your street family around you. What does the night with them look like? What is going on at night when you're with them?
It's like my biggest thing was Friday came. It was like, fuck yeah, Friday's here. You know, I'm getting off work. I'm gonna go home, get ready, get my shit creased up, my pants, and we're gonna go party with the homies. You know, and
go hang out. House parties.
Yeah, house parties, things like that. You know, or just right there in the hood. You know, just I used to live in some apartments on 54th and Main. So, in the back, there was like an alley, and there was space there, and we used to just throw parties there, and that was like the hangout. That was like the highlight of my week, just to go kick it and hang out with the homies, you know?
What's going on in these parties? Most people's minds didn't grow up in that lifestyle might think of Training Day and seeing some of these dudes in houses, you know, partaking in whatever drugs are in the environment and guns in the environment and just people being who they are. Yeah.
That's exactly what it adequate. Is. You know, people are doing weed, other people doing coke on the side, and you know, and it's just a bunch of homies there, and it's like smoking cigarettes, drinking.
What year is this that you're doing? What you were kind of like?
This is like 99.
Yeah, this is
98.
You're approaching the 2000s.
Yeah, it's like
Y2K. Yeah. Is a thing. I mean, on the news.
I mean, all this was going on from like 93 to like 2000, you know, pretty much.
Is there tension on the streets?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember just from news and stuff like that how.
Yeah, it was. That's when the 90s was active, so it was very active out there, especially in South Central. And there was tensions. I mean, we had guns, and we were ready for whatever would happen. And there was times where incidents did happen, you know.
What, again, these questions. What guns were there? Like, where are these guns coming from? How are you selecting these guns? Are people there ready and preparing themselves for fighting other people, or is it just a security measure that they're keeping with them?
It's a little bit of both, you know. It's like you're taking care of your territory where you're at, and you're taking care of yourself. You know, you have enemies out there. So, you know,
you don't call the cops, basically.
No, you don't call the cops.
You don't call the cops. You call your friends, and they show up with a bunch of guns.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
And all these guns, where do these guns come from? I mean,
we'd buy them out in the street. It was guns in the street.
You know, so these people show up. This classic image that the people have, this white dude with a trucker hat and a duffel bag with all these guns inside. Is that kind of the gist of how some of these things?
Some of the guns we got from white people, but most of the guns we got them from paisas. You know,
paisas. Well, just moving guns from one part of the country to the other, basically.
Yeah, they had guns. You know, we got these guns.
Is it? Were you around for the famous bank robbery shooting?
Yeah, I was out there.
Like, did that change anything for you? I mean, I remember that basically changing a lot of the aspects of how cops would approach it, and kind of guns became a bit harder to get afterwards and legislation.
They became harder to get, but as time went on after that, there was a lot more guns coming into the country, so there was a lot of guns, you know? I remember a lot of guns being out there. And people in the military, they were the ones getting all the guns out of the military and sending them, because We used to have some of the white people that used to bring us guns, they were in the military, and they'd get them from...
You know, my whole kind of point with that question is, laws became very strict to get certain things, but you guys were still getting shit anyways because they were coming from walking off military bases. Yeah. I mean, we on our end, I remember here in Tijuana, we'd find grenades and shit like that that were walked off Camp Pendleton probably.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, I mean, that's how people are getting armed. Are people dying around you? Like people you grew up with, people that you know, is death around?
Yeah. Yeah. That was happening.
Are these deaths specifically around, you know, not being in the wrong place or wrong time, or is it business?
It was more territorial thing, you know, and, other times was business, you know. If you're selling drugs on a certain area where you're not supposed to, and somebody comes and tells you, it's just like everywhere else, you know. Somebody comes and tells you that you can't do that shit here, and you don't give a fuck. Well, then there's consequences behind that.
And back then, is there a cartel presence in the? Is it something in the background? Like, where's the cartels in this environment back in the late 90s?
I don't remember the cartels being too involved in our area over there. They were there because they were helping provide drugs for...
They were supplying.
Supplying drugs, but there...
The Sinaloa, probably Sinaloa, that's all it was back then.
But it was more like street. It was more like the streets that had control of what was going on out there, you know. Yeah. The homies, the streets, you know, the...
It was separate.
It was very separate, yeah.
So you're going through this process of balancing this shit. Where does the trouble begin?
I had already gotten a couple of things of trouble, but it was petty shit. You know, I never really got... I've never been involved in drugs, so drugs have never been really my thing. I never slang drugs or sold drugs. It was never an issue with that. My thing was having guns and going out there and doing things with the homies. You know,
association.
It was active, yeah.
Association.
So yeah. I got caught up doing that type of shit.
Yeah, no. So when you say, like, they would stop a car full of you guys, and one of them was doing something probably that they shouldn't, and all of you would come along with.
Yeah, I got a case where marijuana was found in the vehicle, but I took the blame for it, but it wasn't my weed, so I went to jail for that, you know?
Thinking about it now, the weed thing, it's fucking stupid, right?
Yeah, very stupid.
I mean, how much weed... was there that got you guys in trouble?
It's like a dime sack. Like,
and now?
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess it's when you think about it now, how stupid it is. I mean, what are the effects of weed on your friends?
It was just, I remember smoking weed, you know? I mean, it was just fun to laugh.
Do you, at any point in your life, remember anybody taking a... I feel very violent. Let me go fucking...
Fuck no.
No, it was like the opposite,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you just mellowed out and relax and fucking have a good time and you laugh, you know? Yeah, everything was just funny.
Yeah, it was funny, and also music was better, you know?
Yeah.
Different food.
Yeah, everything was just intensifies all the good senses in your body, you know?
Because I have this... the same process when I remember back on some of these things, and me from the other side, because I was a cop in Mexico, and I mota would be around whenever I would see it, and I grew up smoking it, you know. I lied on my application that I never smoked it. I think I smoke a lot. But whenever I would find something small like that, I'm like, you know, man, cocaine would be another thing, but weed would be like, you know, it's ridiculous how much lives were ruined by demonizing this fucking plant to such an extent. Like, see a bunch of dudes in a car, you know, and find weed. They're going to go somewhere and relax. I'm not going to have to worry about these fucking guys for a bit. You're going through this this lifestyle. You say you're getting caught up in association.
I get picked up in 2000. I get picked up for a double homicide case that happened in 98. I wasn't involved in the case, but
it was association. Was it basically a gang affiliated shit?
It wasn't too much a gang. It was like a robbery gone wrong to a certain extent. You know, I don't like to get much into that case, but it was a situation where a certain person that I knew had an issue with a certain person that which the crime happened with, you know. So
and names were fucking said and shit like that. And
yeah, so then so that's what happened. So I ended up going and I was fighting the case and the county and these guys. That's what ended my job at Warner Brothers actually, because the detectives went to look for me and
at work. Shit.
And they put me out to be this fucking monster. This motherfucker killed two people and this and that, and you guys have this guy working here.
So they showed up and basically that's fucked up actually. Yeah. They show up there and basically put this fear on them to see if they would.
Yeah. And that's when they stopped hiring me. Well, not completely, because after I got out from fighting my case, which is I got a DA reject, so they had no evidence in me because I really wasn't involved in the case. You know, I had nothing to do with any other shit. So I get out, and these people will still hire me, but very, very low-key. They tell me, hey, Jose, we got this work for you. Can you do it? Yeah. But we're not going to do it here. We're going to do it at this other spot. And, yeah. You know, and so...
This is the first time you're seeing your kind of your dreams being eaten by this association family.
Yeah. Thing. So,
are you rethinking?
A little bit, but it would. And I can't say that it didn't have a big impact on me to where I had to stop. You know, it's just like I liked it, and it was fun for me, and it was cool. My daughter was born, so that became a bigger thing. My daughter was born in 98, so that became a bigger thing for me to where I kind of started distancing myself from my homies, not necessarily because of the problems that I was getting into.
What changes when you have a kid?
A lot of things change. You know, you brought this life into this world, and you need to be responsible. You need to try to, you know, be a part of.
You're vulnerable.
You're vulnerable, exactly.
I mean, fuck me, whatever happens to me, but now there's...
That's exactly what happened.
I have to stick around.
That's exactly what happened. And I ended up moving out of the hood. And I would still come around once in a while. But I had distanced myself from it because of that. You know, I moved in with my baby mamas. And so it was being, doing the family thing. And then working at Warner Brothers and working at all these different companies. It wasn't just Warner Brothers. I worked for Disney. I worked on The Lion King. I worked on a lot of different companies, a lot of different set studios out there. So
you're, and all throughout this process, for people that haven't caught on, your family crossed illegally into the U.S.
Yeah,
and paperwork was not there at all. Like you're.
I didn't have papers. My mother was trying to fix her papers, and we actually got an appointment to see if it would get her papers, and we came to Juarez.
So for people that don't know this, if you immigrate illegally into the United States and you're in one of these sanctuary type cities like Los Angeles, you're trying to get your paperwork while you're already stateside. So there's processes you do, but some of them involve them sending you back to Mexico.
Yeah,
and in this case, you were sent. To Juarez,
yes,
spicy Juarez, by the way, because this is spicy Juarez. So you and your mother get sent to Juarez to see if you can get your paperwork done there. And what was the result of this trip?
Well, we went and the papers were denied. Since my mom was, I was doing it through my mom, so they denied her, they denied me. And the only reason they denied my mom was because of her. They needed a paper called Fe de Bautismo, and my mom couldn't get the original because the place burnt down 50 years ago before that. So
Fe de Bautismo, it's like
40
it's
years, whatever.
Baptism.
And they needed that paper, and they denied it because they said that that was necessary for her to, whatever the case was.
It's usually the responsibility of the agent, basically, the immigration agent there, and he just basically
said no. So... My mother decided to go to Jalisco, and I decided to cross back, and I went back to the States by myself. And
so this is again the late 90s or
yeah, like late 90s.
How are you crossing back without any paper?
My fucking school ID.
This is a different time, right? Yeah. Back then, you could say I'm an American citizen and just sometimes you would get across. This is before biometrics and all the RFID chips on cards and shit like that. So you cross back defeated in this. Like, how's what's that feeling when your mom just goes back?
It was devastated because she was devastated because she says, I remember walking out of there, going back to the hotel where we were staying at, she starts crying and she starts telling me, I can't fucking believe it. You know, they didn't give me, I pay my taxes. I do everything I do. I've never been in trouble with the law. I worked my ass off all these fucking years over there.
How many years has, the aspect of, again, people don't know this. It's not like you can live illegally in the United States, work and make a living and not pay taxes. I mean, that you're basically trying to, you're working, you're paying taxes, you're making a living, you're making your way.
She's literally a law-abiding citizen. She's doing everything by the book, by the rules, and they just deny it for some stupid shit. So I had this thing, and I remember that after that, I was like, you know, I told my mom, well, then fuck it, you don't need that. You know, you don't need them. You don't need that shit. Just go on and live your life. You already worked enough. Go to Mexico. We'll figure it out what we need to do. I'll take care of you and all that. And so she did. And I went back and I was working. I was doing great over there, working and making good money. And so she didn't have no necessity to go back to the States. Yeah. I was taking care of everything, you know?
Yeah.
And was working. My brother was in high school. I put my brother through high school. After my parents had separated, so
you adopted the role of caretaker.
But it was an adoption because we were both active, and my brother was from my neighborhood as well. So we were, you know, we were living together, fucking around. He was working. He was going to school. He was going to high school, and then my dad was living here in Tijuana actually when all this was happening. My brother graduated from high school, and my dad goes to his graduation and. And in that process, he's like, my dad's like, man, you're doing good out here. Why don't you go and invest in Tijuana, man? Get a fucking place. And, you know, it's a good thing for you. And I was like, what the fuck am I going to do with TJ? You know, fuck, my life's here.
Yeah.
And then, boom, you know what I mean? I'm out here now. But, you know, that's a whole different story.
What happens that, I mean, you get into some issues, you know? We talked. Before we were recording, we talked a little bit about some of these. The balancing act starts failing. You know, you're trying to make a good living on with your art, and the lifestyle is still going on at the same time. You did some prison time.
Yeah, did prison time for possession of a firearm. I had to. It was protection for myself, but it was also I was getting threats for. I used to have a business in a place called Alameda Swap Meet out there, a tattoo business.
And, yeah.
And the local people from around there start threatening me and, you know, and saying, you got to pay up and this and that. And I told them, Chalice,
homie. Store shit.
Yeah, so I told them, Chalice, it ain't going down, you know. And so I had to carry a weapon, you know, with me. And I already got into a shootout with them before. So it was like, I knew that it was serious. It wasn't like, you know,
It wasn't just threats.
It wasn't just threats. I know it was going down. So it's like, you know, like I said, I got into a shootout with them already before. And so I said, fuck this. You know, I'm not gonna let these fools get over on me. And so what I did is, you know, I talked to somebody and somebody told me, you know what? I think the best thing for you to do is just forget that shit, man. Your life is worth more than just leave that fucking business. So what I did is I sold the business there and I left. But the threats were there already, you know, and they had already came looking for me. So I was like, I had to protect myself, and I had a gun at all times. And I ended up getting caught with a gun.
Yeah, just a stop.
Just a random stop, yeah. Just a random stop.
You get caught with this gun. Now, what's what's going on in your head as this is happening? I mean, you fucking get caught with a gun. You're out there trying to make this life for yourself, and now you're being processed because of this fucking gun.
But you know, I mean, I looked at it and I was like, hey, this is the consequences of your actions. So you know, you can't sit there and complain and whine.
Sin llorar.
Yeah, sin llorando. You know, sin llorando. So that's what I did. I ended up going to jail, and I did some time for that. And I didn't get deported that first time.
What's your time like inside? I mean, it's Where were you?
I was in LA County. It was county, but it wasn't hard for me. You know what I mean? It was a lot of people there that I knew. So you get there and it gets to a point where you're comfortable there. You know,
yeah.
you see.
Are you working in there?
I was doing artwork in there, which is drawings and things like that. I never was a trustee. They call them trustees, the people that actually work for the system. I wasn't doing tattoos there yet. I started doing tattoos when I got to federal prison.
Okay.
This is after that. I ended up doing that time, and then I get out. I didn't get deported. I get out, and I was supposed to go to probation, but I just slacked off and didn't go.
Didn't, yeah.
So then I ended up... But then I ended up getting probation violation, and then I ended up going back to jail again.
And this is when
I get to see I get to go to the feds, the federal judge. I didn't do a lot of time. I did like six to eight months, I think. And then I get deported. I was in Mira Loma, California, and I get deported, and I leave.
What's the process of deportation like? For people that have no idea what this is like, you're in federal holding. Immigration services now have an eye on you.
Yeah, and they just what you do is like the very first time I was there is like they take you to this place, Mira Loma. It's immigration hold camp. So it's like a little mini prison, but nothing but immigration. People there are gonna get deported, you know, and you're waiting there for your time to see the judge. You see the judge at the same place, but it's like a 6 to 8 month period before you see the judge.
Can you speak to anybody? Is there any support? Are people trying to say, hey, you're gonna get deported here? This is what to expect. Is there any of that?
Yeah, but the lawyers are. I mean, especially the lawyers are. They all they want you to do is just sign. You know, you're gonna leave and just sign. They don't want to defend. They don't want to fight for you. They don't want to. Like the best thing for you to do is just. Because if you stay here, you're going to waste more time. You're going to just be here on hold. And, you know, so just sign and get the fuck out of here, you know, pretty much. So
basically sign your deportation papers.
And that's usually what mostly everybody does. So that's what I did. I ended up getting deported. I was out here for 2-3 days, and then I ended up going back.
What's your first day like here? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it was way, way fucking up. It's crazy.
Where did they drop you off?
I got dropped off here in San Isidro.
San Isidro, like it's... What's on you? What's your uniform on?
I had a gray sweater.
Gray sweater and the white t-shirt.
Yeah, regular shit.
Yeah, you cross. Who's there?
When I first got here, my baby mom was out. As a matter of fact, she waited for me here. So that's why I was only here for 2-3 days. I wasn't here that long. I ended up going back right away.
How?
I had one of my homeboys let me borrow his ID.
Look-alike.
Look alike. And
for people that, again, this is early 2000s.
Yeah.
So, and they still do this today. You have a portfolio of a bunch of IDs, and like they'll look at you. Oh, this guy looks like you. So you print out the IDs. So that's one way you can get across. So you immediately, you say, you know what? I'm not going to stay here. Fuck this.
Yeah, I called my homie. He's like, yeah, I got you. He came out here and.
Those are fucking friends, by the way.
Yeah.
Those are fucking real friends.
I drive his car back and his license, and that was it. Hey, what's up? What are you doing out here? I just came to kick it, party, whatever. All right. Have a good day.
Pásale.
Go back, and I'm there already.
Yeah.
So then my ex brings the car back because my homie, I stayed out here in TJ. He brings his car back, and then he drives back, and then we all leave together, you know? And it was just there.
Yeah.
But I was supposed to be on probation. And I never reported to probation, so it became a warrant again. And I was painting murals. I have a lot of murals in L.A., Long Beach, and in downtown and all that. That
so
I painted.
You just went back and just continued business as
working,
usual.
Just working. Yeah. I wasn't active. I wasn't out there in the streets anymore. It was just like strictly working. And
so you're doing a lot of street art at this point. You're painting this mural.
Murals, and I was painting these murals.
Are any of them still up?
Yeah, there's at the LA Zoo. I have a couple. I'm at the LA Zoo. I have a couple in Long Beach, California.
Wow. So
downtown.
We'll try and tag some images there so people can see your art. Yeah. But so you're there just continuing to pursue your art.
Yeah, and, just working and I was painting these murals at this mansion in Arcata, California, and my friend did all the construction part and I did the art part of it. So we're leaving, and he just forgot to turn the signal light on a turning signal, and we get pulled over. I was a passenger, and they put me in the car and check my name and say, yeah, you got a warrant. So
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of our Patreon members for their generous support. It's the only way we can bring some of these amazing people behind the microphone and have some of these amazing Midnight of the Soul conversations for you guys. If you're not already a part of the Patreon community, please consider joining us. We have our giant online training catalog for you guys to have access to, as well as some exclusive Sneak Reaper Industries merch drops for you guys at the Dead Drop tier. I would also like to thank the company Sneak Reaper Industries, one of our main supporters and a company that provides some of the most amazing urban wear, survival specific, and cutlery out there. Your support not only makes this show possible, but also supports some of the charities that we run, including the Fighter's Kitchen out of Puerto Escondido, where we're supporting some up-and-coming fighters under the tutelage of Eddie Farrell. Thank you for your support, and again, please consider joining us on the Patreon. And now back to the show.
Violated your civil rights, by the way.
Yeah. That, but they were used to
I get it. But so you get pulled over again, this mistake happens, and again, you're back.
Back right where I was before, you know? And it's funny because I get there and there's the same motherfuckers there still, you know? It's like, what's up, Spags, you're back? And I was like, yeah. So get there, and I ended up doing some time with them. And then from there, I ended up going, I'm you know, 2.5 years, 3 years passed, and I'm like, fuck, man, I need to go back. I'm supposed to get out, and I tell everybody, I'm going out, or I'm leaving, I'm getting deported. And they're like, I'm like, who? I tell my mom, yeah, I should be in TJ by this weekend or whatever. And boom, never happens. 2 weeks, 3 weeks pass, almost a month. And it's like they had me in holding tanks, from holding tanks in LA County, from holding tanks to the federal building in downtown LA.
Yeah.
And at night, they would take you to these holding tanks in Pasadena and Monterey Park. And
you don't know what the fuck's going on. Yeah. You're basically just being circled into the system.
And it's like, it almost feels like torture because they're doing this on purpose. You get to these holding tanks, they blast the AC full force, and they take your shredders away. So, and it's like, and this is going on for a 3 week period. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Finally, to tell these people, like, what the fuck, man? They're like, no, a federal judge wants to see you. I'm like, all right, but you know, well, then I want to see the judge. If I just want to see, I've been here 3 fucking weeks, almost 4 weeks, back and forth to police stations, and I don't get to see the judge. Well, they're going to come and this and that. So one day it's just like frustration beats you and you're just like had enough of these motherfuckers already. So, you know, you talk to the homies and they feel the same way. So they're like, fuck this shit. When they come in, we're not going to, because they make you take their sweaters off and your shoes. You got to give us your fucking sweater and your shoes. Like, nah, I'm not going to give it to you. Do what you got to do. Oh, yeah, you're not going to give it. No. So then they fucking get the riot gear going on and they just go in there for us in the cell. And then we go at it with them and tear gas and all this shit. And they fuck us up. You know, they beat us down. And my family didn't know about me for like a 2-3 week period because they put us in these different I didn't even know where I was because they took us to these different police stations and these cells and they left us there. So my family was looking for me. That nobody knew where I was at.
I imagine your faces were all fucking
puffed up. Yeah, they were
up.
All fucked up. The cops waited until their faces were
presentable.
And then they took us to the federal building to see the federal judge. So I get to MDC in downtown LA, and then that's where I end up doing my last term. I end up seeing the federal judge, and the judge decided that, you know, I wasn't gonna be able to sign anymore. I get deported for life, so it gave me life deportation, and then I ended up doing time, and I get out in 2009. I get deported in 2009.
How much time did you do?
36 months. So I ended up getting out and.
Were you doing any art in there?
Yeah, I was.
Is this where you were?
That's exactly where I started tattooing in there because I never did tattoos when I was in the state prison system.
You're in this final stretch in there before your life deportation, basically. Are you trying to figure out what your next move is in there? Are you gonna come back?
No, I was. That's when
just,
I
were just done.
When I got sentenced, I was done. I was like, I need to think about what I need to do out there when I get to Mexico. because coming back is not going to help out for me. I mean, I'm going to be doing time for free now. You know, if I get caught, I'm going to go back to federal prison just for free. And it's, yeah. You know, I saw cases where it was cheaper for a motherfucker to get an attempted murder than to go, use reentry. You get a lot more time for a reentry than for an attempted murder, and it didn't balance out. So I was like, fuck this, you know?
You're working in there, though.
I was doing tattoos. I was doing paintings. I was doing drawings. So
how would somebody do tattoos in prison? Like, how do you?
There's
do
a
you
lot of it? Tattoo guns in there. There's a lot of tattoo guns. And,
what are they making? What are they making them out of?
We made them out of the in federal prison. We made them out of the typewriter machines. We take the typewriter machines off, take them apart, and take the motors out and make the machines. I would get the ink. My lawyer was bringing me ink in from the streets, and other homies were making ink in themselves. There was always materials to tattoo on there.
And what are people getting in there? Like what are people getting in there?
It's crazy because a lot of the people that were getting tattoos in there, a lot of them were people that had never really been to prison system. So the first thing they want to do is like, I want to get tatted up when I get out. Come you know, I won't be showing off my tattoos and shit like that. It's just like, but I mean, that's how you get all these youngsters coming out with all kind of tattoos. You know,
they're in there, so now they have to. Communicate that, I guess.
Yeah, and a lot of them getting their neighborhoods, a lot of them getting portraits of their exes, girls out there, you know. Todo le está bajando a las estrellas, a las mujeres, you know, from in there. So tattoo is one of the best ways to do it, you know. And getting names and patterns and just prison tattoos in general, you know. A lot of cultura tattoos.
When you start putting all these, you're writing on people's skins, is there... I mean, I know there's coded stuff in there. Like people have their own meanings over certain things. Like, what are some of the things that you tattooed on people that you're like, oh, I didn't know this. This is what this meant.
I knew a lot of the stuff that meant, so I didn't tattoo a lot of people. You know, you get certain things because you earn certain things. And yeah, I knew exactly what to put and what not to put on. And I try to stay away from all that all the time in there. You know, I did more neighborhood tattoos, more basic tattoos, more... cultura that had nothing to do with what was going on in the prison system. So I just try to stay away from all that.
Religious tattoos?
Yeah, I did religious tattoos.
What's the most popular religious icon that Mexicans want to put on?
Virgin Mary. That's one of the most popular ones.
Why in the Virgen and not Jesus? Like, what is it?
Get Jesus too, but I think that the Virgin Mary was...
It's more iconic.
It's more... Yeah, it's
all. Tenemos mamitis. We're more about the mother here in Mexico.
A lot of people would get the Virgin Mary. It was like one of the most popular ones in there.
You go through this process of like, again, marcaste. This is the last that you pay there, and now you're about to get deported finally.
Finally, yeah, it's like, and like I said, through the whole time I was there, I needed to start thinking like, man, I need to do something out there. I can't. I don't have nothing out here anymore. My ex threw all that shit out the window, fucked it all up. So it's like I need to figure out what I need to do now when I get to Mexico.
But you're going to start from?
From nothing, from sale. Zero. Yeah.
Zero.
$217 gate money, that's what I had.
And it's not only that. I mean, you have to start from zero in a country where zero means a little bit less, you know?
Yeah.
Because this is third world. Also, Mexico at that time, Tijuana
was active.
Spicy.
Yeah.
Spicy Tijuana. It's not like gentrified Tijuana now, even though it's kind of, people think it's this like Wild West place. It's gentrified. It's different now. But you're coming into mid-2000s Tijuana. Yeah. That was a time.
2009, I get deported. So, but it was just, I had just gone through this whole process of seeing just the news in general over there in the system of how everything was out here. And it was like, fuck, you know, we're going to get there. I don't know what to expect. It's like the first thing they tell you, you know that when you get there, the cartels are going to pick you up and they're going to make you work for them. And so you kind of prepare yourself for that. You know, it's just like, fuck it, you know.
What are they warning you? Like, they're going to see your ink and they're going to say, hey.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what
they're saying. Or are you going to get targeted because of your ink?
No, the rumor there was that once you get out, they're going to come approach you. You know, they're going to know you're a fucking soldado for the señores over here, for the people over here on this side, or for whatever. You're a sureño. And being a sureño means that you're active. You're fucking, you know, you with the business. So, you know, it's like, that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to come and get you, and you're gonna come work for us now, you know, and you don't have a choice and shit like that. And those were the rumors, and it's like, I didn't know what to expect. So, I mean, hearing that shit was like, well, I just gotta prepare myself for that. If that's what's gonna happen, then I just gotta roll with punches, you know?
Yeah.
And then you start telling yourself, motherfucker, you put yourself in this situation, now you better balls up and handle your business. But I got here, it was nothing like that. Nothing like that.
What's your first day like? Like your first moment of like, this time there's no homie coming to the border with an ID.
Right.
This is you, what you have on your body, $250.
$217 gate. And I get here and my impression was it was a party going on when I get here, because I got here October 31st, so
Halloween.
It was Halloween. So it was like 3 a.m. and the streets were full of people. Everybody's drinking and partying.
This is Tijuana, so Tijuana is Americanized as fuck.
Yeah.
So we celebrate Halloween and Día de los Muertos. Yeah. We celebrate both. So it's Halloween is usually a party. Like kids go treating here, but it's adults get drunk as fuck.
Fuck yeah. So I get there and I start walking on Revolución. It's like fucking. I mean, like, this is nothing like what they were describing was going to happen out here, you know?
Such a weird time to be back, like, to be here. Yeah. Like, Halloween is your first day in Tijuana. It's wild. So you were expecting to be recruited immediately by the cartels or be harassed or horrible shit. Yeah. And you're just walking through a bunch of dudes having fun and in costumes.
Yeah. And what I did is I was fucking tired as fuck, you know? And I was like, I need to get some rest. And I stayed up in a hotel right there in Centro de Tijuana, on Revolution, right by Revolution. I stayed at the room there. And the first thing I did in the morning is get up and called some people to bring me clothes from the States, because I was still in my federal prison gear, you know? So, but I went out and I started looking for a job in the Centro de Tijuana. I went to the tattoo shops and I didn't, you know, they told me that there was no work for me. So
did you get the feeling that they were discriminating on you because of how you looked? I mean, it's because back then tattoo shops were in Tijuana, and I remember this period, and like they weren't catered to the lifestyle that you're coming from. I guess it was a different kind of style, so they weren't gonna. Were you experiencing some like reverse kind of like discrimination by tattoo artists?
I experienced that at its fullest peak.
What were they saying? Like cholo, like this.
Well,
what are you gonna know? Prison tattoo shit.
Well,
basically.
I didn't find out later, but yeah, I went to go look for a job. They're like, no, we don't, you know, we don't have no work for tattoos right now and shit like that. But I ended up working at this place. I got a job at this. It's like a small. Meaning Home Depot, you would call it out here?
Yeah.
It's a
ferreteria.
A ferreteria, yeah. And it was it belonged to a good friend of mine's friend, and he gave me a job there, and I was making like 180 pesos, 200 pesos a day.
Where in Tijuana?
It's Por La Mesa.
Okay, yeah.
Way over there, it's called Los Hermanos something.
Yeah.
Los Tres Hermanos or some shit like that.
So you're doing carpentry work and shit.
It was just more like carrying shit, you know, labor shit, you know, carrying.
How much are you earning?
180 pesos.
Transferred to dollars, how much is that?
It was like 10 bucks.
10 bucks a day.
10 bucks a day.
How's that feel?
It was fucking weird. It was weird because it was barely enough to fucking, you know, to survive, to eat or whatever. But, you know, a good friend of mine, his name's Rancho. He had a tattoo business in El Mercado de Todos. And
El famoso Rancho. And I'll say this because I have a shit ton of friends that are tattooed by that guy. So it was fascinating when you mentioned him. El Mercado de Todos. He used to have this. Is it still there?
He's not there no more, but the Mercado's still there.
Yeah, no. But so how do you meet him, El Rancho?
I had met him prior times before when I would come to Mexico. I had met him before because I would come to Mexico just to party. And
you would always kind of like gravitate to seeing the local tattoo.
And I seen him the prior time that I had gone, that I had came out here. I'd seen him and we talked and, you know, we got to hang out and we got to meet each other. And he was a cool motherfucker, you know, he was a cool cat and we stayed in contact with him. And I had gone and asked for work with him too, but he was like, I really don't have anything right now. But a couple weeks later, he told me, you know what? fuck it, man. You know, I know you're working over there and this and that, but at that place, man, you know, just come down, whatever. There's not a lot of work, but whatever comes in, we'll split it, man. Don't worry. So I started working there with him.
He vouched for you.
He vouched for me. Yeah, so then a couple of weeks after I was with him, he gets a phone call from somebody in downtown Revolucion in Centro and tells him, I'm looking for a tattoo artist, man. You know anybody? He's like, yeah, I know somebody. So he tells me, I'm going to send you my boy, man. He's looking for somebody. So my surprise, when I get there, I had already gone and asked for a job there.
And the guy told, and, the fucker told you no?
Yeah, the motherfucker had told me no, and I told him, well, I came asking for a job. He goes, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I said no because you look like a fucking, just an ex-con. You're coming out of prison, and I didn't want to deal with no fucking bullshit. I didn't want no problems. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I understand it, but what?
Don't you jump a book by his cover, you know?
Give me a job now or what? He's like, yeah. And I started off like one day a week, 2 days, and then 3 days. And then by then, he became a good friend of mine, and I was working there full on. I was opening the business and closing. And I was working, and I started doing better, doing good for myself, started doing better for myself. Like, when I first got here, I got it, stayed in a hotel room, and then my cousin, one of my good cousins, I love very much because he opened up his home to me with his family, his kids, and, you know, gave me a room in his home with limited space. And he's my blood cousin, but we never really talked. We never really had a relationship until I got here. And he opened up his home, and I stayed with him for some time until I got things a little situated for myself.
Where's the first place you lived here? Like where's the first place
first
independent pad?
At La Hidalgo, Colonia Hidalgo.
La Colonia Hidalgo.
Yeah, I rented a little mobile home place.
Spicy. It's a spicy place.
Yeah.
Colonia Hidalgo, it's like that way.
Yeah.
Orientated yeah. right here. So you had you have your first place. Again, the change of lifestyle between LA and here is
it was very different.
What are you missing? What do you miss? What do you miss when you're in this? You're in the Colonia Hidalgo, living your first independent pad. Like, what do you miss?
One of the things that I would always think about is how I didn't appreciate what I had when I was in the States living here. But you know what? It's crazy that I would talk to people here, and just random people, just because I wanted to feel better for myself, see where my mindset was up, because at the beginning, my mind was fucking with me. You know, it's like, man, you need to go back. You need to do something. This is not you. You know, you fucking got $2 in your fucking pocket, you know? And you either buy a fucking soda or catch a bus to go with my cousin, you know? It's like, and there was a time when that happened. I had just enough to buy me a fucking soda or catch the bus to go to my cousin's house. And I ended up taking the bus, and I took the wrong fucking bus. So it left me in Otay, where the Tijeras are at.
Yeah.
And I had to walk all the way to Boulevard Los Mil because my cousin was living in Real de San Francisco. So you get to
that's a walk.
It's a fucking walk, and getting to his house at 3 a.m. So all those things made me start thinking, like, fuck, man, I need, you know, how do people live here? How do people do it? And I would talk to people, just random people, like, hey, what's up? People that would ask for money. And it's like, hey. You know, a fucking chicle for a peso, and it's like, how do you make money?
Yeah.
He's like, well, you know, you sell 10 of these boxes a day, you got this much. My family owns this, and then it's like they start breaking it down to me, and it's like starts making sense. So, awesome. So I'm like, fuck, man, you know, I fucking never really appreciated what I had back home, you know, and I was doing okay. So, you know, it brings you. Puts you down on your feet, you know, it humbles you. It's like, damn, you know, if these people do it, I can do it. Fuck this.
Yeah.
And, but I remember telling my daughter at that time, telling her, you know what, I can't give you the lifestyle. I can't give you the things I was giving you. I'm not making any money. So, you know, I think I'm going to go back. And she told me, that's one of the things that made me realize that I need to stay here. She said, I'm tired of going and seeing you behind that fucking glass door, behind those bars. I'd rather come see you in TJ. So you're like, fuck, you know, it's like, okay, well then I think that makes perfect sense. Now
it sounds, she wants the best for you.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I'm thinking, fuck, you know what? Now you're going to man up, motherfucker, and you got to do something. And that's exactly what I did. I started living in the Colonia. I started working at that place where they didn't, I didn't want to get hired first, but they hired me, and there was more business, and one thing led to the other. I was working, I was doing okay, started getting my own clientele. And my brother at the time would come and see me. So, but I didn't want my brother to know how I lived because my house wasn't
to American standards.
So, and my brother was doing okay, and I know that I could count on him for whatever, but I just didn't want that. You know, it was just like I would keep my home away from everybody that would come visit me. Nobody knew.
Yeah.
So one day he comes in and he goes to my job, and that day I just happened to be, it's my day off. So he comes looking for me and asks for me, and they said, no, he's not here today. He's off. But one of the guys says, I know where he lives. I'll take you. So he took him to my house.
He shows up,
and he sees how I was living, and, you know, I mean, it's a pretty shitty place. It looks pretty fucked up, but that's just what I was able to get.
It looked okay.
So he's like, man, he gets all tear-eyed kind of, and he's like, you know what? Fuck this shit, man. You don't need to be like this. This is not how you're going to live. You can't live like this. Get ready. We're going to go. We're going to eat. We're going to party. And you're going to open up your own fucking tattoo business out here. You need to make it happen. And I'm like, nah, bro. I don't know how this shit works out here. You know, I have no idea.
Yeah, you don't know how bank accounts, property.
Right. And he's like, well, you just open up a fucking bank account and we'll do it. So he takes off Sunday. Monday comes and he's like, go open a bank account, bro. And, you know, like I told you earlier, it seems like everything was meant to happen that way because I go and open up a bank account on 4th Street where the bank Manorte is at, right?
Cuarta, Revolucion. Yeah.
Yeah. So I go to the bank. I open up the bank account. I call my brother. I tell him, hey, I got the bank account. My brother deposits $10,000 in the account. He says, open up a fucking business, bro. I come out of the bank, and he goes, look for a place. I get to the corner, not even 10 meters from the corner where I'm at the bank. I get there, and I see this place, this for rent sign at this local. I call it. And I go meet with the people, and that same fucking day, I get that.
Duke.
So, and it was just like a chain reaction after that. I opened up that business, and it was a struggle at first because Revolucion at that time was all fucked up because of everything that was going on here.
Yeah, this is post 9/11. All the bars closed down. Violence is all over the. I mean, this is spicy Tijuana. I probably was running around with a ski mask somewhere shooting people. I don't know what the fuck was going on back then. And you start this tattoo business there. It wasn't gentrified Tijuana as it is now. It's getting there.
Yeah. It was very slow. I mean, I remember from school was slow. But it was slow, but it was enough because it was enough for me to have something for myself. And I threw my all into it. I said, fuck it. My brother sacrificed. My family has sacrificed for me. My daughters come and see me. I gotta make it happen. So, and that's what I did. Me amarré los huevos, and I said, fuck it, you know, this is what you asked for.
What's the name on top of that door?
No Mercy Tattoos.
No, so you're taking that name still.
That's the name.
That's the name. Yeah. No Mercy Tattoos. You're slowly kind of growing this business, and this has evolved into like a whole brand for you.
It's a whole brand. I got to meet a lot of people out here, a lot of people that have been really good to me. That's why I embrace Tijuana so much, because Tijuana has opened up his arms for me, and Tijuana's been really good to me. And I got to meet a lot of really good people here in TJ.
From everywhere,
you know?
From everywhere.
My business was from when I opened it with my brother's money, with money that my brother gave me, to where I got to meet a good friend of mine. His name is Jimmy. He helped me remodel my business, helped me out with the business, and from that point on, it just grew more and more and more.
This is one of the things that people don't realize about Tijuana. Like I've made it a point to. I was like, I left here, I had to leave, but I've made it a point to come back and record these conversations here in Tijuana because, one, it's my hometown. I grew up here. Two, I think it has a lot of value as a city. Yes, some shady shit happens, like all cities. But we have Haitians. Like, we have people coming through here that decide not to go anywhere. Or people coming back from deportation and basically settling here in Tijuana. And if you don't know what the city is like and the people that are in it, like, you would say it's a death sentence. But no,
it's nothing like that. You know what I mean? It's like I told everybody, you know, if you're here with the right intentions to do things right and to be walking that straight line and doing, you're going to be okay. Nobody's going to fuck with you. Nobody's going to mess with you. And there's nobody out there with binoculars looking at you and saying, that guy is my target. I'm going to fuck with him now. You know?
Yeah.
They don't do that, you know, and I learned that here, being here that long. I mean, I got to see more fucked up shit in LA in a week period than this whole time I've been here in TJ. And I hear a lot of things here, but I've never actually got to see anything here.
It's always on the periphery.
Exactly.
In the dark.
That's exactly what it is. And the United States tends to emphasize that on people and make it seem like Mexico is like the worst fucking place to be. TJ, don't go to TJ. You're going to get kidnapped. You're going to get... It's nothing like that. I mean, it's...
But you see it now where all these apartment buildings coming up all over the place.
Yeah.
And I imagine you're getting clients that are Americans that are living in Tijuana.
Now that are living, yes. And a lot of them are investing money out here. They want to invest money. There's a lot of money to be made here and legitimately, right, you know, righteously good money. You just have to chase it and have to work, you know, and it's like what we were talking earlier, you know, coming to zero and a little below that, you have to work twice as hard, but you can get to be comfortable. Like here, like I said, I humble myself so much that I'm not interested in being rich. I'm not interested in all that. I'm interested in living comfortable here. And I'm comfortable doing what I'm doing, and I'm working. And there's times when I live day by day, but I appreciate every little bit I have now. And I'm very comfortable with that here. You know? And if it gets to a point where I can have a little more, I'm going to embrace it and use it to help other people. You know, I opened up another business here, and I have people working there for me too. You know, I have a small little sports bar in La Revolucion, and people work there. And then I have the tattoo business. I had opened up a small little restaurant for my mother, and it just got to a point where she was just older, and I was like, yeah, you don't need to work no more. I got to take care of you. But she was providing jobs, so, you know, and I try to do that for people. In my tattoo business, I have a lot of different artists, and some of them are deported, and some of them are from Mexico. But it's like a midpoint for everybody that comes in through this.
It's an island. You made an island for people to go to. Yeah. I've invited you on here to have this conversation and also asked you to put some ink on me.
Yes.
Which is about what we're about to kind of get through. I have absolutely no machine tattoos on me, I think. I some of them are, most the ones that I have are really small and kind of handmade. And you're going to be the first one to put something on me. I went for something pretty specific and symbolic. And I could, you know, there's no better person to put it on me as somebody that's come into the city as an adopted member. And I'm being somebody that came out of the city as I was kicked out of here, basically, for a bunch of other reasons. But both of us finding a home again back here. I think that's pretty fitting. Let's go.
Let's do it.